This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hartman and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. Well, shortly before Prime Minister's questions today, the Electoral Commission announced it would be launching a probe into the financing of the Downing Street flat revamp. James, what has happened?
So the Electoral Commission have said that there are reasons to believe that an offence or offences may have been committed. So they're now launching a kind of investigation into what happened. At the moment, this appears to be an investigation into how the Conservative Party handled it. Now, I don't mean that is the end of the matter for Boris Johnson, because however the Conservative Party handled it, there are questions about what should have been declared in the Register of Members' Interest and the Register of Ministers' Interest. Now, we know that Sir Christopher Guyot, the Queen's former private secretary, is now coming in as the new independent advisor on the ministerial code, and that he is going to look at the flat. Boris Johnson said at PMQs today, in a, I think, distinctly tetchy performance, to put it mildly, that Guyot would look at what further declarations, if any, he needed to make. I also think he said something which I think is going to become hugely important. He said that he had kind of officials have given him advice throughout this process. Now, it seems to me that it would be very odd if the Electoral Commission did not ask to see this advice to understand what had happened. Now, I think one of the other big consequences of the Electoral Commission is that I think that we are now surely going to see the entire process play out, given the Electoral Commission's investigatory powers. And so the question then becomes whether Number 10 maintains this kind of current position of basically not providing any information beyond the statement that Conservative Party funds are not in the present tense being used, or whether they choose to present more information before the Electoral Commission investigation.
Katie, as James said, Prime Minister's questions was a very tetchy affair for Boris Johnson. He kept claiming that voters weren't interested in the questions that Keir Starmer was levelling at him. Do you think that's right? Do you think that was the right approach from the Prime Minister as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's two separate questions, isn't it? Was it right that voters aren't particularly interested? Obviously, we can't speak for every single voter, but I think the vaccine rollout has a greater impact on people's everyday lives than what wallpaper Boris Johnson and his fiancée choose to put in their flat. The flat ride does not involve taxpayers' money. I think that limits probably the public anger to a degree. Not to say people look at as it has rolled out and have thought, this looks really good. I think it does look fairly negative, but I think there are a few factors which means that you don't imagine this being a scandal that would engulf in a tide of public anger. But at the same time, I think it is damaging. And I also think it's not just about, oh, does this cut through? I think it's a slightly sometimes reductive conversation, because it might not be the thing that swings the next election. But at the same time, if the Prime Minister has breached ultimately the rules, if there is a situation where his team, whoever it is, has done something which is against the standards you would expect them to, there is a reason to look at that, regardless of whether or not it is the thing that's most making people excited on the streets. And I think in terms of his response today, as you wrote on Coffee House as well, there is a sense that he ultimately, by being so angry and almost having this kind of angry outburst for not wanting to talk about it, saying, oh, no one cares about this, no one cares, but it just drew more and more attention to it. And I think this whole way they've handled the flat row, and yes, every time you tweet or write something, people will say, oh, we don't care about this. But I think the whole way that Downing Street have handled it has just meant it's just dragged on and on and on. And it's really quite confusing as to why they don't just publish what they have and almost be done with it and see it from there. And I think there's two theories going around as to why they won't. One is that ultimately the Prime Minister is very reluctant to do that because he personally doesn't want to, and that is a comms choice. The second is actually people who can see what's going on behind the scenes potentially think it's so bad or complicated that our interpretation that it would calm things down is a false one, because we don't know what they know. And I think it is just adding to this sense it's just going to run and run. We have the formal investigation from the Electoral Commission. We also now have several inquiries. There's also a government inquiry with the new independent advisor on ministerial interest looking at this. And you also have Labour pushing for more clarity. But I think while it's still a case of getting little bits of information eked out here and there, I just don't think it has any end in sight.
James.
So I think when the invasion finally comes out, there's going to be one of two reactions. We're either going to say, good God, why didn't they get that out months ago, never would have mushroomed. Or as Katie says, we're going to say, Christ, you can see why they tried to keep that quiet. And it's quite hard to see now how it's not one of those two things. I think there is an element that Boris Johnson has always... he has a very stubborn side when it comes to... I'm not saying this is his private life, but things that he perceives as being his private life and a reluctance to talk about them. It's worth remembering that when he had to resign from the Conservative front bench, it was because the then party leader Michael Howard had asked him a question about Boris Johnson's private life. Boris Johnson had basically been refused to kind of engage with that discussion. And so I think that might be it, but I personally think that this is obviously all going to come out, so you might as well get it out and say, here it is, rather than having kind of each tooth pulled out individually.
Now, another leader has had a particularly bad day, much worse, in fact, than Boris Johnson's day. Arlene Foster has just resigned. Katie, tell us what's happened.
Yes, this comes after calls within the party for a leadership contest. There was talk of a no-confidence vote, potentially. And just minutes before we started recording, Arlene Foster has told Sky News that she will step down as DUP leader. In a statement, she said, "It is important to give space over the next few weeks for the party officers to make arrangements for the election of a new leader," and described her time in the role as a privilege of her life. She says, "The future of unionism and Northern Ireland will not be found in division. It will only be found in sharing this place we are privileged to call home." Now, Arlene Foster was facing a lot of internal pressure. You had 75% of the DUP's Northern Ireland Assembly members signing a letter demanding a leadership contest. So while she has technically made this decision, it felt so she didn't have many options here. And I think the question is, where does this lead the DUP now? But I suppose before we get to that, I think you have to look at how the DUP behaved over Brexit and think they must be now looking back on that as ultimately a mass strategic miscalculation. There were times, and we covered it on this podcast at that time, I think, Three Times a Day podcast was the era, where there was a Brexit deal Theresa May had brought back, which I think in hindsight many think would have been the best option for them. But instead, Boris Johnson, who went to DUP conference, he said, "Look, I'm never going to put a border in the Irish Sea," was where the DUP decided their interest best lay, and that's the path they went on. And we now have a situation where we can have a debate over whether it's technically a full sea border, but there is much more than the DUP had wanted in place, and you have a very difficult situation with the Northern Ireland Protocol. There's a lot of anger about how the DUP made that decision, and also a lot of anger within Northern Ireland at the Prime Minister, who is seen as someone who's dishonourable and ultimately misled. And I think that was going to have implications for the key figures in the DUP at the time of those choices. But I think it is, in terms of how you now repair things, I think it is a really difficult path for that party, because people are being pushed towards more extreme positions.
James, what does this mean for the still febrile situation both in Northern Ireland and at Stormont?
I think this is a very important moment in Northern Ireland, because one of the reasons Arlene Foster essentially has been forced out is that the DUP is losing quite a lot of votes to the TUV, a more hardline unionist party, and that is why Arlene Foster is going. I think the challenge here is Arlene Foster was a DUP moderniser. She was a former Ulster Unionist Party politician who had moved over to the DUP. And I think you see this from the tone of her statement and the part that Katie quoted. She wanted to create a more inclusive unionism. And I think the question now is, if you see the DUP move to try and shore up their flank against kind of Jim Allister and the TUV, I think that will probably lead to more votes moving to the alliance, and that split TUV-DUP vote could result in a situation where at the next Stormont election, Sinn Féin are the largest party in the Stormont Assembly. Now, this isn't technical but important. Under the St Andrews changes to the Good Friday Agreement, that would mean that Sinn Féin would provide the First Minister. I think that would be a massive psychological blow to unionism in Northern Ireland. And I find it very hard to believe that power sharing could survive the idea of a Sinn Féin First Minister as Norman. Even though the First Minister and the Deputy First Minister are essentially equal positions, I think that the psychological impact of that would be too great. Now, I think there is a massive role that the UK and the EU have to play here. Katie touched on the Brexit question, the question of Northern Ireland Protocol here. The Northern Ireland Protocol is deeply unpopular in the unionist community. You know, every unionist party is going to court to try and get it overturned. I think it's unlikely to succeed. And it is very unpopular in the unionist community when it has barely been implemented. We are still in a whole set of grace periods, some of which the UK has unilaterally announced. And I think the question now becomes this. You know, the EU can say to Boris Johnson, well, you signed this protocol, so we're going to implement the thing in full. No choice, get on with it. I think if you do that, then I think you will see unionism in Northern Ireland really circle the wagons, and I think it's very hard to see how power sharing survives, and I think Northern Ireland becomes very destabilised. Or you're going to have to take a more pragmatic approach to this. You're going to have to take an attitude to the checks that is more akin to the attitude to the tariffs, where the crucial question is whether the good is at risk of crossing the border from Northern Ireland into the Republic and therefore the European Union. So I think this is a big moment. I think the DUP leadership contest is fascinating. You know, the DUP leader at Westminster, Geoffrey Donaldson, you know, another former Ulster Unionist Party politician, he would keep the party in the kind of foster position. There are people like Edwin Poots, the Agriculture Minister of Northern Ireland, who would take it in a more hard-line position. And British media do not tend to pay that much attention to Northern Ireland. This internal DUP election is, I think, of seismic importance in Northern Ireland.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening. To mark the launch of the new Spectator app, we're offering our podcast listeners the chance to try a 3-month digital subscription absolutely free. To start your trial, go to spectator.co.uk/app offer. Hurry though, the offer ends on Sunday.